It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running on another broadcast day as we wind down the month of July, 2018. It's about a minute and a half past the hour. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live on this, the 26th day of July, 2018. If you'd like to be part of the Madcap Mary Wacky Zany real-time screwball multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room, wander on by to HeadOn.live. Click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password. And you'll be met folks are wandering. It's a beautiful day, I guess, all over the country. And folks are a little slow wandering into the into the chat room. But Anatole's there, and so is Squeaky, and they will happily welcome you. Sparky will be folding space into the chat room, perhaps a little bit later this evening. Pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgistan had a doctor's appointment today. I don't know if he's home yet or not, and I hope everything went swimmingly. Yes. Come on by. Say howdy. Of course, it being the beginning of the program, we have some thank yous to send out. Yes, indeed. We have thank yous to send out to our subscribers, Michael in Madison, as well as to Patrick in Germany. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Patrick. We have thanks to send out to Renee in D.C. Thank you, Renee. And we also have thanks to send out to Peter to Peter. Thank you, Peter. Thanks going out to Clarence. Clarence, are you still in North Philly or have you moved? Are you neighbors with Todd yet? But thanks to Clarence. And thanks to Paul. Thank you, Paul. Very, very kindly indeed. And just making sure we don't miss anybody. Thanks very kindly to Gregory. Gregory says, the Malloy Campfire crew heard the call. Thank you, Gregory. Thank you very much indeed. And thanks to Mildred. Thank you, Mildred, another truth seeker. Thank you, Mildred. Thank you very kindly. Thanks very much to truth seeker David. Thank you very kindly to Sue, longtime friend of the program. Wow, I didn't realize that, Sue. Formerly of Seattle, but now from Georgia. Well, you know what, Sue? You can, if you're listening, you can be part of helping Ms. Abrams defeat that wild-eyed, gun-toting, gun-pointing, menacing, brandishing, unapologetic conservative there in Georgistan come November. So thank you one and all. We're going to Netroots Nation. Dang it, we are. The car is reserved, as is the hotel. And the timing's just about all there is. I have been encouraged to get the hell out of town on the 30th instead of the 31st as I had planned. With the idea being just, you know, so I don't have to rush it and so I don't have to stress out. I may do that. But I had planned on being on air at least for Monday evening. That was why I set up the departure the way I did. I wanted to be here for more in Monday. And one last day of fundraising free broadcasting. It kind of depends on the... We'll see how it plays out over the weekend. But as for the broadcast schedule itself, I know I'll be on the air on the 2nd and the 3rd. That's a Thursday and a Friday of next week. I know I'll be on the road on Tuesday. It's unlikely I'll get the rig set up at a hotel somewhere in order to do a program, but it's possible. And Wednesday is also possible, although I'll probably spend most of that afternoon doing the walkthrough at Netroots and finding my broadcast location and making sure that there's internet there and making sure that there's electricity and a table and chairs. You know, they invited us to Radio Row, and you know things can get weird there sometimes. So that's the reason for getting there. You know, before the whole thing gets cooking. Already working on getting some guests who are going to be there at Netroots Nation to talk to us. Got a couple of them lined up already. So I think we're going to have good conversations. We're going to have good programs. And like I said, hopefully introduce the program to some people who didn't even know it exists. And make some new friends and hopefully bring some more people into the conversation. And thank you once again, one and all. Thank you to Rudy. And thank you to Johannes, our buddy of long standing, Johannes in Colorado, for making a big chunk of this happen. And thanks to everybody who responded to the Beat the Swede challenge. And thanks to the Swede himself, our buddy Scott in Sweden, for making it. Thank you very, very kindly, one and all. I am informed by Brother Deacon Asa that... We are, viento en popa on both streams, Captain Roberto. Well, thank you. I think that means going. I hope it does, right? Thank you, Steve in New York says, Netroots Nation, dear Bob, can't wait to hear. Evangelize like a Baptist without the snake handling and strychnine swilling. Spread the word. That is indeed the plan. So cross your fingers. Now it is the 26th. This day is Thursday. That means it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. A day reserved for those things that make us go, "Whoa!" You know, because piercing the thorn in the side. Our buddy Horst. Came up with Thorn in the Side Thursday a lot of years ago now. And it has served us well. Let's see, the weather check for the evening. It is 37 degrees centigrade. Well, that doesn't help me much, Marty, in the Sacramento area. I take it that's hellaciously hot. That's the part of metrics I never, you know, I can convert centimeters to inches and grams to ounces and even the occasional kilometer to the occasional mile in my head, but the Celsius scale always sort of evaded me. But I can tell you that apparently I've got the better end of things because it's a somewhat muggy 81 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent grounds of the amazing Kincaid Mansion. We're out here just off the back of the Gulfstream 5 hangar, and we share a common wall with the garage where we keep the Maybach. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Maybachs, right? Oh well, that makes every dadgummit, Marty, get a ride or don't get it at all. Marty says, "I'm sorry, it's 36. That's 97 degrees Fahrenheit." Thank you for the Fahrenheits, Marty. That is hot. You know what? I bet it's going to be right hot at Netroots Nation, too. That doesn't sound good. Steve in New York says, "I have what I think stepped on the thorn of thorns today. The thorn is my maternal unit." Don't say nothing about mama. Mm-mm, don't do that. So, you know, it's August, it's hurricane season. I'm headed south toward the Gulf. And so I've started watching the Atlantic and Gulf of Mexico to see if anything's churning up out there. I hope not. But even so, this time of year, and down there, it is not unusual at all to get drenched on any given day just with a little convection pop-up thunderstorm. And hey, let's remember, New Orleans is below sea level. I was there about a year ago. It was almost this time last year. Agnes and I had gone over to see the Battle of New Orleans site. And it was fascinating. And earlier in the day, or maybe the day before, they'd had a massive thunderstorm blow through and found out that a bunch of their, you know, not the pumps at the levees that handle things like hurricane surges and so, just the stuff that handles ordinary rain had failed, and a bunch of mayhem had ensued. The city had flooded. I hope that doesn't happen again. Right. I've got a lovely little hotel room at a very, very good price. Y'all were kind enough to make it possible for me to go, and I'm being very, very frugal in the process. Not too far from the convention center, but couldn't quite manage the rate that the convention center wanted. Mm-mm, no. But I love this place because we stayed there last year. It's an old building and a historic building, so it's got some karma. Yeah, I know. Marty says, "It's not even August yet." I know. Believe me, I know. Hey, get the month right, Bob. Well, I said it was the 26th of July, damn it. But Netroots Nation will get going about August 1, 2, 3, 4, right. So that's what I was getting at. Thank you, Randy. Randy with the handy-dandy reminder. 37 degrees centigrade is normal body temperature, 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, that will come in handy. Yes. So, where do we go for this thorn in the side Thursday? And yes, I meant to mention that. Thanks again to everybody. A note coming in from Ralphs. The trash, and I think I mentioned it last night, but I need to mention it again and say thank you to everybody. The Trash Fitzwalker Stand Challenge, courtesy of Ralphs, was indeed met this month for the seventh month running. And you know what? Speaking of Trash Fitzwalker Stand, there's reason to hope, if you are in Wisconsin, there is reason to hope that your long statewide nightmare might finally come to an end. Long about November or January, depending on what happens in November. Scott Walker is trailing potential Democratic challengers by like 8 and 11 points, respectively, depending on how the data unfolds. So, hopefully the maggots will, and, you know, after all, there's a lot of farming and dairy and stuff that goes on in Fitzwalker Stand right now, and maybe the maggots will figure out that Julius Geezer really doesn't give much of a fuck about them, and maybe they'll stay home. and not foist Scott Walker on Wisconsin yet again. On Wisconsin. See what I did there? I know these things. I'll bet it's a lovely day in Wisconsin today for a spotted cow. That most crisp and refreshing of go-to utility beers, available only inside the territorial confines of Wisconsin. Spotted Cow from New Glarus Brewing Company. Good, good, good. And a note coming from Jeff in Hellhole, Indiana. Just remember, no matter how hot it is at Netroots, keep your clothes on. I'm sure naked radio would be frowned upon in public. Thank you for the reminder, Jeff. Yes, yes, I will be. I'll be broadcasting clothed, fully clothed is a word of fluid meaning. But I will be broadcasting clothed. Here's another possibility. Now this is bandwidth dependent. This is, but I'm going to take some technology with me so that we may actually do some video. The audio part of it might be a little bit sketchy, but we may actually do some video. Maybe send some video to Facebook Live, send some video to, YouTube, live stream, something like that. And see, just as an experiment to see if it works, to see if we put my horrifying mug on video, how many people will run screaming in the opposite direction, even with me fully clothed. Yeah. So we're gonna get some mileage out of this trip. And again, I thank everyone who had a hand in making the journey possible. Interesting day on Wall Street today, speaking of thorns in the side. I'll bet Mark Zuckerberg is about bent double right now. Facebook, and the idea that Facebook is even worth this kind of money blows my mind. Facebook hemorrhaged $119 billion on the stock market today. Please, show me the simpletons who invested in Facebook. It dropped 19% of its value. And $119 billion of its market value, which is, of course, just electronic beeps and clicks and hoots and dashes and whatnot, ones and zeros, disappeared. And Mark Zuckerberg became a not quite as wealthy man today. Good, 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 good. I can't think of anything short of a complete collapse that rendered Mark Zuckerberg utterly penniless that would make me happier. But $119 billion, and that's just 19%. Let's round that up to 20%. So let's just pretend that $119 billion is... Okay, let's say $120 billion is 20%. So to get 100%, that you'd have to get... So that's 500. Really? Really, the market value of Facebook is $1.1 trillion? I mean, I know, I realize I can't cipher worth a hoot, but no. Half it, I told you I couldn't cipher. $600 billion is the market value of Facebook. Oh, please, whoever put that market value on Facebook, bring him to me. I have a deck of cards and a folding card table, and I would love nothing more than to deal a hand of three-card Monty to the simpletons who valued Facebook at $600 billion. Really, I'd love that. We can start out slow. We can start out at, say, $1 million a hand. Find the queen, boys. Find the queen. All you got to do is find the queen. See, there's the queen. The queen's put back down. Let's move it around. Look it around. Follow the queen. Don't take your eye off the queen. Okay. Now, where's the queen? Oh, sorry. You lost $1 million of Facebook value. Would you like to go for double or nothing? Double or nothing. $2 million. Follow the queen. Follow the queen. See, there's the queen. I'm holding the queen. There's the queen. Shoulder hold right up the way. Yep, see it? Right there, right there. There's the queen. Moving around, moving around. Apparently, there's good money in Russian rat fucking. We're all dependent, and that's, you know, I guess that's where the value of Facebook comes from. We've all become dependent on Facebook because Facebook has sucked all the oxygen out of the online media atmosphere. I'm so old. I remember a time before Facebook when you would just go to different websites and read stuff. When there was no clearinghouse space for kitty cat videos. Yeah. But I guess that's where its value comes from. It's the best I got. But 119 billion's a good start. Because this, you know, this crap gets overvalued in the first place. Again, I'm so old, I remember the tech bubble of the 90s. I remember things like Netscape Navigator. And, dogfood.com or something like that. Everybody had an online startup and all of them were worth $1 billion. You know, until they weren't. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know what you're doing right now, Mark Zuckerberg, but if you were sitting in a warm bath and might be a good idea. Randy in PA says Mark Zuckerberg reminds me of Dick Clark in an odd way. He has the backing of the big boys. I saw an expose of Dick Clark as the inevitable golden boy of rock and roll. Boy, what a sleazebag he apparently was. And lived to be like 1,000 years old. I think that's really where the idea for Highlander came from. He was actually originally a concert promoter in Germany during the Baroque era. If it ain't Baroque, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. And just successively cut off other concert promoters' heads and took their power until he became Dick Clark and invented Rater Record. I remember one year Sandra and I used to have such a... you know, the conversations would descend into very serious stuff at first, but then it would descend into absolute shallowness. And I remember the one night Sandra asked, "When is Dick Clark going to get his glory call?" Took a long time. But, you know, hey, maybe Mark Zuckerberg is Dick Clark. Maybe there was one more head to chop off or something. There can be only one. Yeah. Note coming from Steve in New York. We can't forget fauxflowers.com, F-A-U-X, flowers.com. Yes, says Steve, that was a real thing. And in its heyday, it was worth $1 billion. Right. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, it is said that Facebook lost its value today because they said they were going to concentrate on privacy. I can proudly say I have not spent 1 minute on that massive time suck. good for you. Your life is probably by far the better for it. But if you are involved in any kind of media whatsoever, you are not involved with it so much as you are driven to it. Because it has sucked all of the oxygen out of the media atmospheric space. I mean, you've got people making their fortunes now on Facebook as well as YouTube. And I don't know how that changes. But yeah, the one thing that that apparently ruined the party, not just the privacy issue, the fact that investors were said to have been stunned by a revelation from Facebook that its user base and revenue grew more slowly, according to the Associated Press, than expected in the second quarter as it grappled with privacy issues. And it was the worst trading day Facebook had had since it went public in 2012. A couple of more days like that, and it might actually start to reflect its actual value. Good God, can you imagine what would happen if Facebook crashed entirely? Just collapsed. The country might have a collective shit hemorrhage. The world might, for that matter. Oh, now there's a reminder. Alexander with a note. By the way, yes, MySpace is still around. Singer Justin Timberlake is a co-owner. Well, there's a reason never to go to MySpace. Alexander said, years ago, Facebook used to be my primary social media outlet. But then I discovered Twitter, and it pretty much went the way of MySpace for me in terms of regularly frequent usage. But then again, there's Twitter, and Twitter has never turned so much as one head to tails on one Lincoln penny. And yet somehow remains afloat, I think, largely because of the fact that it's the platform of choice for geezer disgustus. Alexander also points out, I don't feel any sympathy for Zuckerberg, especially given the fact that he recently engaged in some Holocaust denial. Might as well have also denied the Holocaust of 150 million black Africans during the Middle Passage of slavery. Give him time, Alexander. Give him time. He'll get around to it. It wasn't so much that he denied the Holocaust. It was that he said he wasn't interested in stopping Holocaust denial on Facebook. You know, in other words, he wasn't interested in stopping Orwellian historical revisionism on Facebook. Oh, dear God. Ron and Raleigh reminds us, yeah, that little shitheel Logan Paul has become a millionaire from his Facebook page. Sometimes I just feel like we're not doing this right. Yeah, maybe there's some way to set up a camera with the lens covered up and just send the audio. What am I thinking about? But there's other stuff that goes with this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Oh, yeah. Among other things, it was a sort of a deadline kind of Thursday. Today was the deadline for the government, the Trump regime, to actually have reunited all the families that it split asunder, including not just the wee little ones, all the families. The Trump regime, of course, lied to the court today, or maybe not to the court, but lied to the public, I had an announcement, a notification from Facebook a couple of minutes, from the Associated Press a couple of minutes ago, stating that the government claims that they've reunited 1,800 families and there's just 700 that they haven't yet. And it's like that woman I mentioned that I heard on NPR yesterday, who said, "I have a sneaking, a horrifying sneaking suspicion that there are thousands of children who will never see their parents again in this country." You know, separate them from the families and then just, raise them up long enough to kick them out into the brutal and cruel realities of anarcho-capitalism and let them go to work for poverty wages and basically be engaged in involuntary servitude that just barely passes 13th Amendment muster. A note coming in from Robert in Australia. Facebook, yuck. I also have never been on Facebook. It truly is a massive time suck. It is the tulip mania of the early 21st century. I hope it ends the same way. I understand that. You know, there's value to bringing people together from disparate parts of this little blue-green time machine that's hurtling through the universe. But it's the way that capitalism insists that people be monetized in order to use the site. And of course, it wouldn't have $600 billion in value even if everybody was just paying a subscription fee and there were no ads and there was no way for various and sundry skullduggerous individuals to manipulate data and target people. If everybody was just paying a monthly subscription, they would not have $600 billion worth of value. They wouldn't have half of that or maybe even a quarter. Marty says, driven to Facebook. That's how I got there. I got on it when I was directing a short film and cast and crew were all on it. Had to keep in touch. Now it's my primary source for pictures and videos of my niece. See? Don't forget the cat pictures. Scott in San Diego says, I've been on Facebook 7 or 8 years now, and I've found it to be quite useful. I'm able to be in touch with a number of my Horn community friends, and not long ago I joined a Facebook group that has proven to be very helpful. It's a group that shares many nifty ideas about the creative way to find practical use for thousands of Free America Online CD-ROM discs. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't see that one coming. Oh, damn. I've somehow managed to collect. Well played, Scott. Well played. You earned that daggum cowbell. You certainly did. Yep, once upon a time, I hustled those AOL discs. I did. Truly, I did. And, well, it is to my eternal shame that, in fact, I did so, but it is what it is. But, having mentioned Twitter, I don't know if you caught it, but earlier today, Comrade Kumquat went on Twitter to claim that Twitter was shadow banning conservatives from Twitter. Over at Wired, the article says, on Thursday, somebody had their snark working today. On Thursday, in the early morning hours typically reserved for tweets bashing China and the mainstream media, apparently over at Wired they have not learned the magic word yet, twooping, President Trump accused Twitter, arguably the most important platform in enabling his rise to power, of shadow banning conservatives. Based on a Vice News story that said that Twitter is suppressing Republicans and some members of Congress by failing to surface their names in certain search results on the site. And Vice called it shadow banning. Shadow banning? Why is that tickling my old DJ brain? Oh, yeah. Going back to 1978. Andy Gibb, put some pants on. Oh, wait, you've got pants on. Oh, no. Let's just get to the chorus. Jesus, this is a terrible video. Those strings sound like they need to be part of a song about something terrible happening to someone in a swamp in Georgia or something. No, I can't. But okay, shadow banning, shadow dancing. My DJ brain is satisfied, and well, not satisfied, but yeah. Maybe somebody out there is already hard at work on a Geezer Disgustus voice and the lyrics to Shadow Banning. Where's the damn chorus? Oh, there it is. Twoop in the light, taking me to the right, Shadow Banning, baby. No, I don't, that's not automatic. But, yeah, he's all upset because he thinks that somehow or another right-wing speech is being suppressed on Twitter. Twitter, meanwhile, said, no, they're not shadow banning anybody. And it's worth noting that the whole term arises out of one of those skeevy, bullshit-laden little things that, who's the creepy guy who he got caught trying to break into a senator's office in a fake telephone company jumpsuit and got charged with a felony. James O'Keefe. Yeah, that little crook. Yeah, there's no such thing. Maybe Tangerine Tiberius actually read some of the responses to his tweets, because my God, it seems like even the bots that were Jesus will bless you if you just put the Mexicans in prison, Mr. President. Those people say, and now most of the time when I go and check out one of his tweets, it's just. It's filled up with people telling him what a piece of shit he is. Mainly because, well, it's true. The things you guys latch onto. The AOL discs. Look what you've started, Scott. I remember when AOL sent good old 3.5-inch diskettes. We'd erase them and use them. Then they went to CD-ROMs. After sharpening a few edges into ninja weapons, what else could you really do with them? They made great Christmas ornaments with the lights, and they twinkled. Yeah. Jack in Shreveport, subject line, AOL discs. How about a supersized version of the old Star Trek disc pistols for shooting all those AOL discs? See how I got a Star Trek reference in there, too? Oh, well played. Well played, Jack. I remember those things with the little tiny plastic. Only this one would be really, really big, and I bet those things would hurt. Hell, my little one got taken away from me. I'm still kind of pissed about it. Scott re-shadow banning, my demented, heat-stricken mind immediately went to eclipse-sized shadow cast by Steve Bannon. No, he actually is the shadow Bannon, because he's out of the White House, but the vast majority of his policies are still in effect. You get the idea. He's on Chlamydia Claudius's speed dial. Or maybe he's just in the recents at the top, and it's just a man. Yeah, call Steve. I know. But it's a kind of a deadline Thursday, because the Trump regime blew the deadline for reuniting families. Of course, while it would be nice, I doubt sincerely that the federal judge in question will haul anybody in on contempt. It would be nice if a member of the Trump regime were to be, say, stuck in one of those detention centers and maybe have their children taken away for a few months and sort of lost. And, oh, gee, I don't know, we can't find them. They might actually learn something. I don't know if they're really capable of learning, but you'd like to hope so. But with the deadline having passed today, the ACLU was there to remind us of what's actually going on. The ACLU is the plaintiff in attempting to get families reunified, and protected, preserved. And so the a filing from the ACLU they asked the government to engage in a 7-day stay from the time parents are notified of a reunification until deportation. The ACLU writing, in their months of separation, these parents have not spoken to their children for more than several minutes on the phone. Many, if not most, have never spoken to a lawyer. And yet, within moments of seeing their kids for the first time, defendants propose to put them on planes with no meaningful opportunity to receive legal advice and make a considered family decision about whether the children should remain in the United States without them. As of Tuesday evening, the government claimed to have reunited 1,012 parents with their kids. Today they claim 1,800 have been accomplished. And, well, because it's the Trump regime, I don't believe a word of it. And frankly, there's nothing like our immigration system to prove that all the high-toned, high-minded language of the Constitution about rights to a fair trial and rights to confront accusers and rights against self-incrimination and rights to a jury trial, a due process, equal protection, it doesn't apply. I could say, and I will, you know, imagine if it was you. But the situations are so Orwellian that it's almost impossible to. But the ACLU is right. How do you make any kind of a decision? Well, okay, we did what the goddamn federal judge said we got to do. We reunited your family. Now get out of here. What? You got an asylum claim? Bullshit. We're sending you back home. Well, you know, you can't have your kid if you don't sign on the dotted line, Senora. You don't speak English? The forms are in English? Trust us. What a nightmare. So the deadline's blown by. They haven't met their obligations. Yeah. Jesus. So that's one deadline. But there's another deadline out there. And I wasn't aware of it until I read the story earlier today. We blew another deadline, you know, by like a month. That deadline had to do with sweet, lovable, cuddly, huggable Vladimir Putin, his predilection for having people, poisoned to death. That one snuck past about a month ago. And oddly enough, I'd never have known about it were it not for the fact that a Republican complained about it. Representative Ed Royce, a Republican from California, sent a letter to the White House. In that letter, he was something less than thrilled and told the White House so about their dithering, the White House's, in deciding whether or not to do anything sanctions-wise about Poisoner Pootie. Ed Royce wrote, I'm sure to the dismay of maggots everywhere, because, well, among maggots, Pootie is almost as popular as the Tangerine Tiberius. Let's see here. Oh, this is annoying. Yeah, I'll have it in a second. NBC News had the story. Ed Royce is actually the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And he wants the Trump regime to do something about the poisoning that has taken place in Great Britain. In a letter dated today, he wrote, "Dear Mr. President..." That's already too many big words. "On March 15th, 2018, after consulting with my ranking member, I submitted to you a request for a determination regarding whether the Russian government violated the Chemical and Biological Weapons and Warfare Elimination Act of 1991 in connection with the recent poisoning of British citizen Sergei Skripal and his daughter, Yulia. Pursuant to Section 306B of that law, which you can read for yourself at 22 U.S.C. 5604 and 22 U.S.C. 5601 at SEC, your findings were due to the committee within 60 days. 93 days have now passed since my request," and this is where Congressman Royce needed a parenthesis, "and 93 is bigger than 60. Close paren. yet we have not received the statutorily required determination. Mr. President, last week's news reports that British police have used video footage to identify multiple Russian suspects involved in the nerve attack further underscore the urgency of this matter. You've already indicated in a previous statement that it is highly likely Russia is responsible for these brazen attacks and thereafter ordered the expulsion of dozens of Russian intelligence officers from the United States in response to Russia's use of a military-grade chemical weapon on the soil of the United Kingdom. Your enforcement of the Chemical and Biological Weapons and Warfare Elimination Act of 1991 is critical to deterring additional attacks. 1991. Gosh, that would have been a Congress that was not controlled by a bunch of wild-eyed fucking maniacs. That's just 3 years before the gangrene contract on America. Context is everything. That bill would never have been passed by a Republican majority Congress. Your enforcement of the Chemical and Biological Weapons and Warfare Elimination Act of 1991 is critical to deterring additional attacks. Upon your determination that Russia is responsible for the March 15th poisonings, mandatory sanctions will be imposed. These sanctions will remain in place and increase over time until Russia takes steps that include allowing UN inspections and providing reliable assurances it will not again use banned chemical weapons. You see, that's what happened in the UK, and we probably should do a little better job of keeping track and maintaining sight of it. They engaged in chemical warfare on British soil. It wasn't a poisoning. They engaged in an act of war. It wasn't espionage. It was fucking war. And I'm the peace guy, remember? I don't believe in starting wars. I also, however, do not believe in allowing people to wage wars against someone else. It's what kind of makes what's going on in Yemen so damn disturbing. In recent years, Vladimir Putin, Congressman Royce continued, has steadily escalated his campaign to consolidate power and undermine the United States. Your compliance with the Chemical and Biological Weapons and Warfare Elimination Act of 1991 is critical to showing Putin that we are serious about challenging his deadly acts, as well as his ongoing attacks on our democracy. With the caveat that I always add editorially that our democracy is mainly a matter of aspiration and not operation. Thank you for your attention to this matter. He wrote with his tongue lodged firmly in his cheek because 93 days after the 60-day deadline had 33 days after the 60-day deadline had passed, it's pretty clear no attention has been given to the matter. I respectfully request that you submit to the committee the written report required by 22 USC 5604B2 no later than 12 p.m. on Thursday, August 9th, 2018. Well, you can respectfully request in one hand, Congressman Royce, and you can shit in the other and see which one fills up first. I look forward, says Ed Royce, to continuing to work with your administration to hold Russia accountable. Continuing? When did they? Yeah. When he said he consulted with his ranking member, he was talking about Elliot Engel of New York, the ranking Democratic member. It, 33 days. Let's see. Couldn't make the deadline for reuniting infants with their parents. Couldn't make the deadline for reuniting all the other kids with their parents. 33 days late on a deadline to deal with an act of warfare on British soil, a member of NATO, and, well, remember, we're obligated by the North Atlantic Treaty to treat an attack on one member state as an attack on all the member states. It's an idea they picked up from the labor movement. harm to one is a harm to all. Good for the labor movement coming up with that idea. But, they have no interest, this White House, the Clementine Caligula, no interest at all in standing up to Mother Russia. Mm-mm. And while a few Republicans are occasionally asking questions of the regime, I disagree with the language from the NBC News story that says the criticism from Royce comes as Trump's fellow Republicans are increasingly willing to publicly question his decision-making on foreign policy, especially when it comes to Russia. Well, okay, so they're willing to question, but the heart of the problem occurs when they refuse to do anything about it. That is a tactic most recently and clearly demonstrated by the likes of Bob Corker and Jeff Flake. They of the rubber-tipped arrows. It was reported today, by the way, since we brought Twitter into the mix. And it's a pretty not leaky investigation, the Mueller investigation. I mean, you remember what a sieve the Starr investigation was? Leak after leak after leak about the cleanest. Yeah. Well, not so much with the Mueller investigation, but it. It has shown up in the New York Times that Trump's tweets, actions, and public statements have finally made it to the attention of Robert S. Mueller III. Or as the Republicans like to call him, as Darlene pointed out, Mueller. Mueller. As in the babes mewling and puking in their mother's arms. Mueller, Mueller. If you want to get downright German about it, but Mueller. Mueller is a hell of a lot closer to Mueller than Boehner is to Boehner. Boehner? Yeah. I'll never forget how Boehner made my German friends laugh. He pronounces it how, Bob? Yeah, Boehner. B-O-E-H-N-E-R. Yeah. Boehner, you say? Mm-hmm. No. But, yes, according to the New York Times, the tweets, the public statements have entered into the calculus of whether or not Comrade Kumquat engaged in obstruction of justice. According to the Times story, Trump's lawyers, who have a lot to worry about, are worried about this. From the Times article itself, the special counsel's investigators have told Mr. Trump's lawyers they're examining the tweets under a wide-ranging obstruction of justice law beefed up after the Enron accounting scandal, according to three people. The investigators did not explicitly say they were examining possible witness tampering, but the nature of the questions they want to ask the president and the fact that they're scrutinizing his actions under a section of the United States Code titled Tampering with a Witness, Victim, or an Informant raised concerns for his lawyers about Trump's exposure in the investigation. This, of course, prompted a quote from Rudy Giuliani, who really should go back to the home and play some whist or something, maybe some pinochle.
If you're going to obstruct justice, you do it quietly and secretly, not in public.
Well, that may have been how it used to be there, Rudy, old boy. But it's a new world, and, well, your boss, Donnie Dimwit, would have to understand that he is liable to be held accountable for breaches of the law before he even gave a rat's ass about violating it. So I got to tell you, I'm beginning to fret a little bit. We went away for a little while last year, and Charlottesville happened. All kinds of shit happened. But I'll have the broadcast rig with me. I'll definitely be on the air three days next week, probably, more than likely. At least. I'll do my best to keep up. But as Steve from Georgistan pointed out last year, you can't go anywhere else, Bob. Because some shit's bound to go down. Yeah. Let's see. Randy and PA pointing out, at least one of those poisoning incidents has been purportedly called into question by The Guardian. Well, not the one of Skripal and his daughter, Yulia. The one that killed somebody, perhaps, I think. If I recall the story correctly. Irish Dave says, but can you even eat soybeans with an American spoon, at least? White House held a Made in America event. One little problem. All the flatware was made in China. You know, because, of course. Oh, well, hey, we haven't talked to Thomas in a very, very long time. What's happening, Thomas? Oh, wrong button. Okay. What's happening, Thomas? That's called a reset.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing good. You?
Except for the echo, great. Maybe it's gone now.
Maybe it's gone. Can you hear me okay?
No, it isn't.
Can you hear me?
Oh, I hear you. I just hear me, too.
No, that's not good. I love Skype. Isn't it wonderful? I wanted to talk to you about social media and what you had to say, because I'll make it brief since you're hearing me in the background.
No, it's me I'm hearing in the background. As long as I'm quiet, we're good.
Okay, cool. Basically, the subscriber model almost works, because you were talking about that. And one of my pet projects, as you know, is I'm trying to come up with a subscriber model, like Facebook. Without going into details about mine, the problem AOL failed was because they didn't catch up with making it a user type of experience. They kept everything proprietary. So they failed by making it only companies' involvement. And Facebook is good at making anybody involved. However, they never introduced a subscriber model, and I think it's too late for them to do that.
Oh, it absolutely is.
So I think somebody has either new, and again, I'm not even going to say my company's name, so I'm not plugging it, but to do it, I think you have to be first, and you have to do a little bit of both, and then you'll have some kind of net worth, but you can't overdo it. As far as either end, whether it be advertisers or subscribers, it has to be a happy medium.
And I don't, can you just check your knobs, Thomas, and see why it is that I'm feeding back to me?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I'm because I have no idea why you are. Let me.
Because I want to engage in this conversation. It's just a little difficult.
What about now?
I didn't get me again. Okay, it's gone. Whatever you did worked.
Oh, cool. Awesome. I love it when I perfect tech.
Look, see, there's models and there's models, Thomas.
Yeah.
For instance, the model we operate on here is dependent on me not wanting a Gulfstream 5.
Yeah, thank you.
And being willing to joke about the fabulous Kincaid Mansion when, in fact, it's a falling down little 81-year-old house that needs about, well, a gazillion dollars in repairs and doesn't get through winters very well. And
yeah.
But the subscriber model works because we've got subscribers to the Horn who manage to keep the program going for a week out of every month. And then the other three weeks, I have to reach out every night and say, we got to keep the bills paid here. And I can't broadcast while, you know, I mean, there's just, you got to keep the rice and beans in too.
Yeah.
And it works, and it's worked for 15 years.
Yeah, but you also have a stable following too. Like we've done pretty well for 3 years at FYNation.com, and that's in large part of because of you and our affiliates that we have, like Tom Hartman and Steph. And pretty much reliably, we have some issues, but we, with our few sustaining subscribers like you have, we're able to do that. And
the core of it though is that and this is where the Facebook model gets weird.
Yeah,
the core of it is that the program is free. I mean, the program goes up on Podbean, it's free. The program goes up on iTunes, it's free. The program goes up all over the place, it's free. And we simply ask the people who are willing to do so make it free for everybody else. What we don't do is take everybody's information and then try to capitalize and monetize that. And that's what makes Facebook so skeevy, so sleazy, so underhanded, and so genuinely untrustworthy. But it's also what has made it a goddamn darling on Wall Street. $600 billion of market value? Really?
No, and I'll tell you.
How do you divide that into the number of users? So what's the per user value of Facebook?
I couldn't tell you, but I know it's inflated, whatever that number is. Let's see
here. Just doing some hillbilly cipher and just rough numbers. Mm-hmm. Let's see, it's a 6 and a not, not, not. And a not, not, not. And a not, not, not. Well, that won't let me go past 600 million. Damn it. But let's say that there's... Okay, we'll just, because that's the miracle of exponential notation. We'll pretend that there's only 6, not, not, no, no, clear, clear. Okay, 6, not, 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 not. Okay, we'll pretend there's 600, that it's worth $600 million, all right? And we'll pretend that there's only... 6, not, 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 60 million people on planet Earth. That would result in a $10 per user value.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you do the 6 billion divided by, if you do 600 billion divided by 6 billion, you get what? 10 times 6 is 60, so... You get $100 per person value. I was short a knot there somewhere.
But again, that goes back to my point. It's
and
completely
so and so
inflated.
To take. Well, let's keep going with the hillbilly mathematics, though, Thomas.
Okay.
Okay, we're clear. So let's take one knot dot divide by 12. That means $8.33 a month to use Facebook to earn them $600 billion if every person on planet Earth was on Facebook.
Yes.
Which, of course, is not true.
Absolutely. Because you have to remember there are companies that use it as a social media platform who count as a person. There are, you know, people who have multiple accounts who aren't going to pay for those multiple accounts once, you know, if it ever went to pay. And that's why I am adamant that, you know, every once in a while you'll see this Facebook is going to a paid subscriber model. And I laugh at that because,
well, those are all spam. I mean, those are all just bullshit.
But that's the point, though. It's they're never going to do that because they didn't start that way. They can't. They have to offer something completely incredible, type of. And I'll tell you right now, they don't have the ability to do this just based on how they've taken away news feeds and certain things that made, frankly, Facebook so good, like trending. You know, that was one of the things I loved about Facebook. And I can tell you right now, just based off of how they've taken away their model, they're not going to be able to go to a subscriber basis unless they're willing to offer subscribers something more than they offer free members. And then free members aren't going to want that. So they're not going to, the model sucks. They have
But they have no interest in going to a subscriber basis.
Yeah, I know. But the problem is to ever have to weed out people like Alex Jones and people on the alt-right and everything else that we have issues with. They have to, almost, unless they're gonna be like YouTube and actually stamp out certain videos that really do qualify as hate speech. That's why Zuckerberg will never go against Holocaust deniers, because freedom of speech. No, you don't have a freedom of speech when you signed up with a contract with a company. You lose that the minute you sign up with a contract with a company.
Well, no, the freedom of speech simply does not apply to non-governmental entities.
Exactly. I think we're on the same train, maybe in different cars. But either way, there's no freedom of speech on Facebook. So anybody, or Twitter for that matter. So anybody who goes in and whines and cries their little eyes out about YouTube freedom of speech and Facebook freedom of speech. No, you said it yourself. You signed up with a company, you make a deal with their company, and you sold your soul. The minute you make up a deal, all you got to do is do what
nobody
does.
But the question is, did people reasonably expect to have every last jot and tittle of their existence monetized by Facebook?
Yes, because it's a free service. And if they didn't, that's on them, not on the company. Because as you said, you're giving yourself to a company.
So it's okay?
I didn't say it was okay.
This is the question. It's okay if you've signed some sort of... Well, I'm reminded of the South Park episode where Cartman signed... Was it Cartman signed the EULA for Apple and wound up being turned into a human centipede by Steve Jobs because he'd agreed to it in the EULA, even though there was no way he could reasonably have been expected to have read the goddamn thing, because nobody does. They're designed not to be read. And so the question is, if we had real consumer law, and they're closer to having it in Europe than they are here, by the way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If we had real consumer protections, would it be okay that Facebook in 2015, 2016 said, hey, as long as the check clears, we will actively help adversaries of the United States engage in acts of cyber warfare against the United States? Because the money's right.
They're in the wrong. However, the caveat goes to, do they know and are they... anybody with the developer tools can sign up as a developer for, even right now, for Facebook. And get that information, if you want to, if you know what you're doing. And then you, and then use it to your own advantage or disadvantage. And that's the beauty and the negativity of Facebook. Now, here, I think we should have the consumer protection availability that Europe does. I agree with you. I also agree. I also, as someone who is completely biased in this conversation, as I stated at the beginning, I have my own model that I'm working on. And my model is completely different and going against the grain of what Facebook is, but still in the same software type of model. And I believe that you can have a consumer-driven company that believes in people and free expression while not allowing foreign adversaries steal people's data, while allowing people to make money off of your company and make money as a company. And I think it can be done right. But every model that I've seen, from AOL when it first started to Facebook, has done it wrong. Now, I'm not saying that I'll do it right, but I think that someone can come along and grab the metal by the tools and by the balls and have a subscriber-based service, and people will pay. And I can say this by Netflix.
But you're, I mean, well, get, yeah, but you're never, I think Netflix and well, I think movies generally are sui generis in this discussion.
True.
Because it's subscriber based, but it's something people actively and avidly want in their lives. And I don't think Facebook or any social media tool as such can ever rise to that level.
See, there's where I disagree with you. I think if it starts out as what I described, where you are a consumer-driven model and not a dollar-driven model, I think you can do it. But that's the problem, whether it be AOL, which is
subscriber-based. But Wall Street will never touch you.
That's why you start as a private company. I mean,
yeah,
again,
but you're never going to be anything but a private company, because Wall Street will not touch you as long as you're running on a subscriber model, and you're not able to constantly... well, I mean, look, here's the numbers. Brother Deacon Asa pointed them out to me a minute ago. He said, I hate Facebook as much as the next guy, but let's look at the valuation story from a business point of view. Ace is better than that, better at that than me, because I'm not worth dick from a business point of view. That's why we invented a broadcast model that involves a lot of rice and beans. He said, they bring in $12 billion in quarterly revenue. That's $48 billion a year. Wow. Let's call that roughly $60 billion annually, or $50 billion annually, rounding up more or less. That'll value them at about $250 to $500 billion in valuation, depending on what your portion of their revenue is actual profits. So in a highly inflated stock market, which this is, Brother Deacon Asa points out $600 billion is not entirely unreasonable. He says, but I am in agreement with the other members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, and I have basically limited my use of it to bashing the chlamydia Claudius. that being the case, I had a nice response to my little analogy of constant bugs in the constitutional code. The other day, our buddy Tosh wrote in, and he liked the analogy. He said, the problem is bugs become features the closer you are to the deadline.
Yep.
And so, you know, there's no, as long as the bug that is letting any Ivan, Mikhail, or what have you, have access to every single person on Facebook, as long as that's, it's going to be problematic, but it's also going to be catnip to Wall Street.
No, absolutely. And before I let you go, because I don't want to take up too much time,
You're fine.
I appreciate you mulling through the tech issue that I had, apparently. Thank you, Skype. And say that the AOL discs, I don't know if you were a Soprano fan or anything, but do you remember there was a Sopranos episode where Carmela was on AOL?
I seem to recall. It's a very long time ago now.
Yeah, I know, but so is our life. I always like that because it's the old pick up the handset to get on the internet, and you have the squelch in your ear. I did that to my mother once. I nearly got shot for almost losing her connection.
Ling, ding, 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 ding.
And then now we have to
explain
to kids what a... Yes, and me explaining to my daughter now what a landline is.
Well,
that's how we
yeah.
used to get on the internet. So, I think we've come a long way, but we got a lot to learn. And I think there is potential to get the model right, but I don't think Facebook is it.
No, but Facebook's not going anywhere.
No, it's not. And that's the catalyst of it. There are too many people making too much money off of Facebook for it to go.
Oh, but there's too many people enjoying the hell out of it too.
Well, yeah, and it's not a horrible product in the long run. It just has bugs, which are multiple flaws, which are
features.
Features. Thank you. That was the word I was looking for.
The bug that resulted in Geezer Disgustus was a feature as far as Mother Russia was concerned.
Well, absolutely. You know, I'll let you go by saying that I agree with you 1,000%. And as someone who is a peace activist myself, what happened in England was an act of war. Absolutely an act of war. And anybody who says otherwise, I know we have a few on our side of the aisle. Oh, this Russia is... You're in a conspiracy theory type of thing and want to blow it off. I can't stand that. You can walk and chew gum on... And I think we do it better than the righties. Because we don't believe in all that conspiracy gonzo crap all the time.
And by the way, just so we've got the numbers to play with, according to Scott in San Diego, Statista.com says that as of the second quarter 2018, Facebook had 2.23 billion monthly active users. And remember, what caused them to hemorrhage $119 billion in value, in other words, not quite three full quarters of profits, was the fact that... they experienced unexpectedly slow growth. Well, you know, this is a planet that's got roughly, 6 billion people on it?
Yep.
What happens to them when everybody's connected? Do they just do something else and mail out the neck plugs to everybody so that we can all just be connected all the time?
Well, that's what live streaming is for, there, Bob. Just saying.
Yeah, I know.
And you can always just do a logo and broadcast the horn on Facebook. Just saying.
I haven't quite figured out. But the other problem with that, though, is that, you know, if I'm just using a phone or something like that, I could do the filibobster, but I couldn't, we couldn't get your conversation. Your
That's
end of the
true,
conversation.
But I mean, my squeaky voice... My conversation and the technical issues.
I hate to break it to you, Thomas, but it's not always all about you.
Oh,
I mean,
there are
yes. I know.
We have to have that talk sometime, though.
One of these days, I got to have a long talk with that boy. Yeah.
Thank you, Bob.
Oh, you're welcome, Thomas. You're welcome. And you have a lovely evening and. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a conversation whilst I'm at Netroots Nation. I don't know. It's a damn shame that you're not because FYI would be great to have down there doing its thing.
And I was like, one of my old roommates in Vegas was from New Orleans, and I was thinking, man, if I knew his family and whatnot, I'd be asking for a place to stay right now, looking at the dates and everything. Because I would love to bring the network down at some point. But
you know, at one point in time, I mentioned it a while back, it would have been a blast. It would have been a blast to do a little mini horn in. You know, find a state park or somewhere nearby and set up a smoker. I think Todd and I were talking about it one evening. Get a brand new acorn and break it in and do a horn in barbecue if there were going to be a bunch of people coming down. And then clean it up real good after the fire went out, and donate it to like a homeless shelter or somebody that feeds hungry people.
No, absolutely. It sounds, you know.
And
we need
you
to
know
talk
maybe
about
maybe if
here.
Maybe if I can find my inner Zuckerberg and just start monetizing the fuck out of this thing, we could afford to do that. But as it is, no.
Yeah. Well, we'll get there, Bob. We just keep on churning out the good stuff, and people will come. You build it, they'll come.
Well, right, and if it was that monetized, it wouldn't be any fun.
Exactly. I mean, look at what they do over at Fox News. I mean, do you really?
Well,
want
no.
To
I mean, tune in to any for-profit talk radio broadcast, and you'll find out that a 180-minute show only has about 100 minutes of content in it.
No, you're absolutely right, and I couldn't imagine doing that. Like when I do get on the ability to be on the air, which will be tomorrow, I love getting the chance and opportunity to talk to other people because, like you said, it's not about me, and that's the most you know, you've been on my show, Bob. You know that's the most fun we have when we're shooting the shit, and well, we can say shit and fuck and everything else.
Yeah, and booger.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I hardly knew her.
Ah. Thomas, have a good evening.
You too, Bob.
Later. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Thomas from FYINation.com, which does, in fact, carry the program every evening, and you can find, if for instance, if you can't find the program on our TuneIn channel, by God, it'll be over there most likely on FYI Nation's page on TuneIn, FYINation.com, and all kinds of wonderful stuff. Hell, I mean, I don't know, maybe Thomas broadcasted to Facebook. He knows these things. I don't. So we're at the halfway point of the program this evening. If you would like to engage in some conversation, you're mighty welcome to. You know the number, 304-574-8178. Toll free from anywhere in North America. That would be your Mexico, your Canada, and your United States. 844-843-4676. 844-THE-HORN. And that'll get you into the program. And then there's good old Skype to Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. It's Thursday. We've got the Green News Report this evening with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And let's see here. What? Tell me no. Poor Betsy DeVos. Her family's $40 million yacht got untied from its dock. Now, I like boats. It's one of those fantasies I engage in. You know, nothing dirty. It's not like Bob Kincaid naked on a boat or anything. Well, okay, if we're out in the middle of the ocean. No, I'd get sunburned. But the big motor yachts, nah. But the really beautiful sailing yachts, they intrigue me. I look at them and I think about a renewable, sustainable energy future. And I think about the day when sailcloth can be made of super lightweight photovoltaic fabric. And every starched out sail can be gathering electricity to run the boat and hulls, the fiberglass hulls that are sturdy but built, and they've got solar collectors on them, and wind turbines that are catching the wind and helping to propel the vessel. Yeah, maybe have a renaissance of clipper ships, plying the route between San Francisco and Sydney, or San Francisco and Hong Kong. Would that be some? I mean, would the millionaire set love to take that kind of a cruise? Yeah. And do it all sustainably? See, that's the other side of the coin from all the mountains being blown up and all of that evil shit that we've talked about so much. There's a future, you know. We're all gonna have wind turbines and solar panels. No, there's really, really cool shit that we need to be thinking about. I mean, can you imagine the hull of something as long and sleek and lean as a clipper ship from the late 19th century, only instead of being made out of wood, it's made out of fiberglass resin, and every square inch of it that's above the waterline is gathering electricity. And the sails that way. So anyway, I like boats, and I like sailing yachts. I'm guessing at $40 million, this was not a sailing yacht. I think there are $40 million sailing yachts. I bet our buddy Tom in the Bay Area could confirm or deny that rather quickly. But the 163-foot SeaQuest, really, the SeaQuest, you're as rich as the goddamn DeVos family, and that's what you come up with for a name. It was moored at the Huron Boat Basin. I'm guessing that must be in Michigan. And the captain alerted the authorities early on Sunday morning that it got untied. Now, we don't know if the boat simply untied itself by wiggling back and forth. There's all these knots you have to learn to tie when you're going to do the whole yachting thing. And one of those is a knot for, you know, mooring your vessel so that it doesn't... I wonder if somebody cast her adrift. But as a result of being cast adrift, the boat... banged back and forth against the dock, and the captain said caused somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000 worth of damages. Aw, really? Poor DeVos. However, will they afford the repairs? Well, maybe she can take a payoff from some charter school or outfit or something like that. Huron Police Chief Bob Lippert told Fox News Thursday morning, because it's their story, of course, that the investigation is ongoing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, a heartfelt I don't give a fuck goes out to Betsy DeVos and her family. With the only thing occurring to me that it's a pity nobody was on board, and it's a pity that the boat didn't go down with all hands except the decent human beings. I knew somebody'd pick up on the SeaQuest. Marty says the SeaQuest was the captain named Nathan Bridger by any chance? Yeah, I know. How can you not? It's impossible, isn't it? So, a long-distance dedication going out to Betsy DeVos. A little bit of what is referred to by some lovingly, by some not, as yacht rock. I know one person who will, as soon as this person... I'm not giving away gender. As soon as this person hears this bumper, this person who listens to the podcast and doesn't listen live, will hear the intro to this bumper and will probably be able to predict with 100% certainty what the song is going to be. So I'm going to give this person about 5 seconds for this person to bang his or her fist on the table and say, "Play it, Bob! Damn it! Play it!" This is The Horn. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid. No, wrong song. How did that happen? Although that's a great song, too. It's also yacht rock. This all qualifies as yacht rock, but no, this song. We'll consider that last a tease. No, wrong song. What the fuck is going on here? Wait a minute. I know what's going on here. Oh, Thomas, the problem was all mine. I apologize. That's solved now. Oh, if I'm having these kind of problems on a night like this. No, don't say that. Don't say that. Anyway, yacht rock going out to Betsy DeVos. Go for a hole below the waterline next time, whoever that was. Of course it was. You knew it was.
Such a long way to go!
It's Thursday, July 26, 2018.
These images look like Dante's Inferno.
Extreme weather brings a hot and deadly July to most of the planet.
Yosemite National Park will be closing today due to dangerous conditions.
Wildfires force evacuations in the U.S. West.
Get this, they got a month of rain in mere days.
While extreme storms and floods pummel the East. Plus,
the Trump administration this week is expected to open a new front in America's environmental battle.
Trump and the GOP expand their war on the environment.
All of those battles and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This is really about rewarding the largest corporate polluters.
Of course, they're not just going to pollute for free, you know. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, we look away for just a few days, and man, it's like the entire planet is on fire.
Yeah, extreme weather has brought a hot and deadly July to much of the planet. Greece has declared a state of emergency after intense heat and wind-driven wildfires killed more than 80 people. Outbreaks of wildfires in Europe now extend above the Arctic Circle, which is also in the midst of an unprecedented heat wave. Northern Finland this week hit an all-time high temperature record of 94 degrees. This is above the Arctic Circle. The BBC reports that elsewhere in Europe, farmers are declaring bankruptcy because of crop failures due to persistent drought and heat. Japan also hit an all-time high heat record, 106 degrees Fahrenheit, amid a weeks-long extreme heat wave that has killed at least 70 people and sent 22,000 people to hospitals, just weeks after record rains triggered deadly flash floods and landslides that also killed hundreds.
Now, to be clear, of course, it's summer, so we expect the weather to be warm, but these are record warm temperatures all across the globe.
And not just record warm temperatures, record extreme rain events. These are in line with what climate scientists have projected we will see thanks to man-made global warming.
Well, we are seeing it.
Yep. And in California, officials have ordered evacuations and partial closure of Yosemite National Park at the height of the tourism season due to the fast-moving Ferguson fire. Smoke from that fire has also made air quality in the park worse than notoriously polluted Beijing, China. On the East Coast, 30 million people are facing flash flood warnings from extreme rainfall events, with Pennsylvania in particular grappling with historic flooding. Meanwhile, in politics, leaked documents show that the Trump administration intends to strip key provisions from the Endangered Species Act to cripple the nearly 50-year-old law that has saved iconic American wildlife like the grizzly bear and the bald eagle and more than 200 other animals from extinction. Biologists say gutting the Endangered Species Act will harm healthy and productive ecosystems, but according to Brett Hartle of the Center for Biological Diversity in an interview on Fox News, the administration's goal is really just to benefit industry.
It will probably, over time and collectively, degrade many of the natural areas that are part of America's heritage. This is really about rewarding the largest corporate polluters.
That was on Fox News?
Yes, it was.
How'd that happen?
Republicans in Congress are also working on legislation to eliminate protections for wildlife. The Sierra Club called the coordinated assault, quote, essentially a death sentence to some of our most imperiled wildlife. Former Congressman John Dingell of Michigan, one of the original authors of the Endangered Species Act, told National Geographic it would not pass Congress with today's anti-science Republican majority. He said, quote, I don't think I could pass the Lord's Prayer in that nuthouse.
Love John Dingell.
The Trump administration also plans to try to revoke the state of California's special authority under the Clean Air Act to set its own tougher emissions standards for vehicles to reduce its air pollution. That's a move expected to launch a lengthy court battle that very likely could reach the U.S. Supreme Court.
And because Republicans believe so much in states' rights that they want to keep California from having the right to determine their own environmental regulations.
Thousands of pages of internal emails accidentally released and then retracted by the Interior Department show that, contrary to his public statements, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke and his aides dismissed archaeological discoveries and evidence showing that the economic benefits of tourism bring billions of dollars $1 billion in revenue to rural economies. They used that to justify shrinking national monuments for the benefit of mining, logging, ranching, and drilling interests. It bears pointing out that once lost, Americans' public lands and animals are gone for good. Finally, the Trump administration has ended a requirement that industries must pay when their operations cause damage to the public's lands, meaning drillers, miners, and land developers will no longer be required to pay to repair any damages that they cause to wildlife and habitats on public lands.
Of course they won't. For much more on all of these stories and the many we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
And at 14 minutes before the hour, we have a correction, courtesy of Jack in Shreveport. Thank you for the correction, Jack. It was Kyle, not Cartman, that held the middle position of the three in the human centipede. Jack continues and says, don't tell anybody, but I knew that without Googling. Okay, Jack, it'll be just be between you and me. There's nobody else heard that. Yeah. I guess this is anti-food porn. Chester's Fried Chicken, a note coming in from our buddy Charlie in Tennistan. I just stopped at a Love's truck stop and got Chester's Fried Chicken. All I have to say is that if someone can fuck up Chester's chicken the way they did, I can only imagine what they'd do to the Hunt Brothers pizza. Oh, my God. Are you kidding? Hunt Brothers Pizza? Gas station pizza? Bane of my gallbladder? Makes my liver quiver just saying Hunt Brothers Pizza? How can you... But then again, how do you screw up Chester Fried Chicken? Oi. Oi. I'm so sorry. So sorry, Charlie. Because, you know, when you're out on the road and you're hungry and you just... You know, you don't want to just cram food in your face. You want to at least feel halfway decent about what... And you get hold of something that's awful. Jack, yes, a further correction. It's the human scent iPad, not centipede, with a smiley. We regret the error. Mm-hmm. And by the way... If you're wondering why the bumper went the way it did, you probably aren't, but way back when I was having my cup of coffee in law school, everybody had to learn how to write a resume and learn how to do interviews, because law firms would come and interview for their summer clerkships, and you had to have a summer clerkship. You just had to. I wasn't much interested. I already had a job at the radio station. And that was the summer that I was going to, I thought I was going to, yeah, clever, work the midnight shift and, get off at about 6 o'clock in the morning and head for the golf course. There was a crummy little golf course outside of, out to the west of Morgantown. Our nickname for it was Ghetto Ponds. Because it was a terrible, terrible nine-hole track, but, you know, bad day golfing and all that. Well, that was the summer that it did nothing. It was nothing but one cloud that just rained on Morgantown every day all summer long. But anyway, it was kind of mandatory. You had to go to these law firm interviews. I had no interest in it, especially in law firms that defended scumbags and stuff. I still had a little bit of my idealism to me, you know, defended coal companies and toxic poisoners and things like that. And one of those law firms sent a guy to do the interview. Usually it was like one junior partner and a couple of ranking associates. And
I sat down and you know, old DJ, you know, and that's Michael McDonald singing those backing vocals. And what he sings is such a long way to go. And it was irretrievably, irremediably burnt into my brain. And lo and behold, I sit down and I wallpapered my apartment that year. I literally wallpapered my apartment with law firm rejection letters. Because I made it clear to them I didn't want to work for them. But they still had to send the rejection letter according to the rules that the law school had. So I just put the first one up on the wall and the next one and the next one and the next one. And pretty soon I had the wall covered. And I sat down to this one interview, and damned if the interviewer's name wasn't Michael McDonald. And he even had a beard. And all the they ask the same questions every time, and they're so tiresome, and they're so meaningless, and everybody understands they're engaged in a process that's got no purpose whatsoever. And so it was, well, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I just looked at him and I said, well, Michael, I can't say. Because I've got such a long way to go. Such a long way to go. And did it deadpan. No smirk, no nothing. Light never came on for Michael McDonald. And I walked out of that interview with a story that I'm still telling to this day, that for anybody who knows that Christopher Cross album, it always elicits a giggle. I told my best friend in law school about it, and he didn't stop laughing for about 3 hours, and he still laughs about it when he thinks about it. He hears the song. He's told me since. He hears that song on the radio, and he doesn't think about Michael McDonald in the song. He thinks about me sitting in the interview saying, I've got such a long way to go. Such a long way to go. Life is good. It can be good. It can be fun. It doesn't have to involve $40 million yachts called the Sea Quest. I mean, honestly. I know. I got a note from Ron and Raleigh during the break. Well, hell, Bob, what should they call it? The Murder of Innocence? You know, because Betsy DeVos's brother's Eric Prince, and he's a homicidal, murderous, war crime committing sleazebag. You remember Blackwater? Yes, of course. Well, it kind of fits, doesn't it, Ron? Yeah. Let's run over to the phones and check in with Todd, because we pulled up short in our conversation last night. Hey, Todd.
Listen, I didn't know, but congratulations, man. I think it's great that you're representing everybody, in Netroots.
I will do my dead level best. I can't drink in New Orleans, but, you know, maybe I'll get something and put a big straw in it that'll look like, you know, and plant it right there on the table. Maybe hang some Mardi Gras beads from the mic stand or something.
It'll work out. You know, I mean, you sound relieved. You really, I mean, it's just, that's beautiful.
I wanted us to be there. How can I say this? This radio program is older than most progressive radio programs. There's a relatively small number that are older than this program that have been on the air uninterrupted longer than we have.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud of that, not so much for myself, but for the community that's formed around it and has sustained it and has sustained itself. Damn right I'm proud. And we got wonderful people like you and oh so many others who, you know, not me, who make this program interesting and make it real. So, you know, you be proud too.
You should. I mean, I can hear it. Everybody else hears it. You sound like a weight has been lifted off. You sound like, you know how you feel when you know you're going to the beach and you know you're going and everything's fine. You got the money's right. You got your hotel. Everything seems to be going fine. You know,
Well, yeah, and on top of that, this whole thing began with our buddy Scott in Sweden. Mm-hmm. Because for about 3 years now, maybe four, he's been doing the Beat the Swede Challenge. And right. Every year we have beaten the Swede. And so for us to be able to beat the Swede on this again, yeah, that's a big deal too. And it shows a degree of respect for the effort that somebody puts into, you know, making something like this happen. So, yeah, definitely.
Well, you know, the quality of your program, because, I mean, there's a lot, there's not a lot anyway. We don't have many, progressives don't have that many options anyway. But I would think that it seems like your audience and, you know, the way that you conduct your program, people, you know, it's a deeper thought type of a program. It's not, I mean, we have fun and all, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we try to work through things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt.
That's why I always talk over you half the time, because I it's so stimulating. You know, the conversation is just so stimulating. You know, you got to.
Well, I mean, if you're standing down there.
It's craziness.
If you're standing down there at the Rippy Mart and you're talking to a buddy and you guys are and you're both into what you're talking about, you talk over each other there too, don't you?
Well, yeah, it gets heated, sure. You know, in a good way. You know, right? Yeah. So that's what it's about. But I internet went out for a minute and I tuned back in.
Todd, did the internet go out again?
Hello?
Yeah, did the internet go out again?
I might have.
Yeah.
I see, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, see, I heard curiously and ironically, you said the internet went out for a minute, and that's the last thing I heard before I heard hello again.
You're kidding me.
No, because the goddess of irony never takes her eye off of anything.
She
didn't give a shit about sparrows or lilies of the field or that bullshit, but you know, she's watching the shit that matters.
Yo, she's rolling coal. I mean, she's rolling coal.
Rolling coal.
No, but I thought I heard somebody talk about that movie, that really crazy, nasty, disgusting movie, Centipede.
That was Kyle failing to read the end user license agreement with Apple and being turned into a cent iPad by Steve Jobs on South Park.
Okay. Because I remember seeing this crazy movie, Centipede, when I used to do Pirate Links. And I don't even know how this movie got made. I don't know I don't even want to describe it, but it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. If you know what I'm talking about, it's crazy. So anyway, that's what I thought you said. Anyway, and you know what? Yeah, I never did ask you what happened when you got to Trader Joe's. I never got to ask you that.
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. And I immediately came home and wrote heartfelt emails to Trader Joe's begging for a Trader Joe's in Charleston. My luck, if they ever put one in here, they'll put it in freaking Morgantown or something. But no, I am sitting here. I have in my hand as I speak, because I'm doling this stuff out to myself under only the rarest of circumstances, and occasionally just stopping to take a swig, because I'm that weird. Because I'm afraid I'll never have it again. I have before me in my hand a 3.4 fluid ounce bottle, 100 milliliters, of Trader Joe's Yuzu hot sauce, simultaneously spicy and citrusy fragrant. It's the most wonderful hot sauce I've ever tasted in my life. I got chicken and green chili, fresh chicken and green chili tamales that were not to be beaten. And they were out of stock. And they said, oh, we'll have it unboxed in the morning. Well, I'm going to be gone in the morning. But they had aged Havarti that they had just gotten in, and it was just gone off the shelves. And
Place for cheese, Bob. It's the place for cheese.
Oh, man. If you get there and you can get your hands on that aged Havarti, buy it. I swear by it.
I have, and I get the once in a while, you know, I treat myself to the or you know, we treat ourselves to that uncommonly good cheddar. They have a whole wall of cheese, and none of it is bad. I mean, they have
no, really, it was a wall of cheese, a mousse de fromage.
Yeah.
And I just stood there staring at it because, of course, I'm a member of a cheese 12-step program. I'm powerless over cheese, and my life has become unmanageable. I've got the gallbladder to prove it. But, I mean, even as I'm sitting here talking to you, while you were talking, I muted the mic and got myself a little swig of that yuzu hot sauce because it's that good.
Oh, you know
good.
What? Just brought that up. So you're talking about gallbladder and what, you know, if you're trying to process fats, you know, it's hard to try to process the lipids. All right. You know what? I really firmly believe that that hot sauce helps in the digestion of the lipids. And you know what? It's not hoaxy. That the real apple cider vinegar, the unfiltered kind.
No, I believe it.
That shit works.
And I want you to know that swig of yuzu, Trader Joe's yuzu hot sauce, just lowered my blood pressure by about 5 points.
You could feel it, couldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, there was that little endorphin rush, a little bead of sweat along my hairline. I'm happy.
Well,
I mean,
now that
I can't stick the swirly straw in the bottle of cheap tequila anymore, I gotta get my little pleasures where I can find them. And good hot sauce is one of them.
Well, yeah, that exactly. You know, there's so many like hot sauces, and once you get into that culture, I'll never forget years ago, like back in the '80s. The New York Times always had on Tuesdays or Wednesdays they have a science time section, and some scientists, you know, there's been some research, and they showed a correlation between spicy foods or hot spices that grow in equatorial regions. And the fact that when that type of spice is in your blood, you have a better chance of withstanding insect bites that are carrying pathogens, you know.
Well, maybe insect bites in general, because one of the things, and of course, I think it's because she's so sweet, they're drawn to her. But when my wife and I are out working in the yard, she gets stung by stuff. They fly over to me and go, oh, fuck it, I don't want anything to do with him.
Mm.
So maybe there's something to it. And by the way, maybe we had this conversation since we're into the food porn. Do you know the trick about hot sauce labels and hot sauce ingredients?
I always go for the purest. Yeah, I don't want any, no corn syrup, no anything gum, none of that.
None of that bullshit. But no, there's something even more elemental, even simpler. If you look at a bottle of hot sauce and the first ingredient is water,
mm-hmm.
you know that you are dealing with peppers that have been dried and ground into a dust and then reconstituted and rehydrated.
I think it should be vinegar. Should be the first ingredient.
Well, I've only got this hot sauce here with me. But usually, it's. I mean, like if you look at a bottle of Crystal, which
right.
is a fairly ordinary hot sauce, or God knows McElhaney's Tabasco, the first ingredient is aged peppers.
Aged peppers. Oh,
and that means that they have been salted and aged and fermented, and never dried and turned into dust and then reconstituted and rehydrated. So that means
exactly.
you're dealing with peppers that started life on a vine as a pepper and have never been anything but peppers until they got turned into hot sauce. And
that's the real deal.
And
right.
it bummed me out when I learned that, because I'm a big fan of Cholula.
Oh, with the wooden top.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Cholula also.
And
yeah.
I looked at the ingredients, and the first ingredient, water.
Mm. But it tastes good.
Oh, it does taste good. But this this yuzu sauce is the most unique stuff I've ever tasted, because apparently a yuzu is a lemon-like, extremely bitter citrus fruit that grows in Japan.
No shit.
And the ingredients here say vinegar, yuzu blend, yuzu zest, chili pepper, and salt. Salt and chili pepper. So
damn.
It's ooh. Now, I mean, it's not uncomfortable or anything, but it's spicy. But it's got a citrus blast. So you got to jot it down. The next time you're at Trader Joe's, you got to check out the yuzu hot sauce.
Yeah, I'll be there tomorrow. So I'm going to look. It must be next to the spices.
This was just on an end cap.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know. And I'll be honest, I have to make a confession. You see, when I was in Philly, I had so many options. I really didn't go to, I never went to, I knew where it was. I knew where both of them were near me, downtown and Chickentown. But I didn't have, you know, there were too many options. I really didn't have to go. But now that I'm in this food desert, you know, going there is like going to Disney World or something, you know.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the chili, anybody who ever goes to Trader Joe's, the chili lime seasoning, just sprinkled. I mean, you don't have to add anything to it. You just sprinkle it on a chicken breast and grill it, you know, on all your chicken. It comes out like you're at Applebee's. Perfect. You can't mess it up. It's worth it, and it's not expensive at all. This shit is amazing. I mean, I've given it to people. Everybody loves it. Everybody loves it. That's all I'm saying. The chili lime powder. Yeah. Mm. So please go ahead, because we're talking about food.
Well, no, Ron and Raleigh just said, I hate to tell you, because Ron enjoys it. He doesn't hate it. He enjoys it. Your state doesn't have the population to support a Trader Joe's or a Costco. Your entire state has a population of 1.8 million. My county, Wake County, North Carolina, has a population of 1.1 million. The Trader Joe's is three blocks from the Costco, all about a half mile from me. And that's probably true, but it's sad just the same. You know, I don't know, maybe they could stick one in Huntington, but you know, Charleston is the most populous area, and you know, there's a good close to half a million people in about a 10-county area within an hour and a half's drive of Charleston, but maybe it's not big enough.
Maybe not. You know, they I looked at the map. They have a map of all the Trader Joe's near restaurants, and I just happened to study it. I was waiting on someone, and they're really strategically located. They're like right on near major interstates. There's something to it. There's something about the way they do things, because you don't have to wait long in line. And let me say something to Ron and Raleigh, because Ron always has some interesting comments. Now, last year when I was in the Raleigh-Durham area, Bob, you would like Raleigh-Durham. Raleigh-Durham is nice. There's an energy there. And the highways are nice and wide and open and clean.
Everybody on those highways is apparently trying to have their NASCAR moment. It's just like I-85, like the connector in Atlanta. But it's a great area. It's just flat.
Well, I know I talked to you last night, and I just wanted to
go ahead.
Let me ask you this, though.
Sure.
You know that one question, because this is really eating away at me like an earworm or something. The second part of the question that was asked of Putin, I'm still not hearing. I'm not monitoring news like I used to, but I'm not hearing people drilling down on the yes to both parts of the question. The second part of the question was the most important part of the question.
Yeah, but see, you heard that. How can I put this? They didn't hear it.
What do you mean I heard that? Of course, I mean, what the fuck is that supposed to mean?
Well, no, most people don't hear things the way you hear them and the way I hear them. I mean, the conversation is still going on about the tape yesterday and whether it was cash or check or charge or 90 days same as cash or easy payments or what the fuck ever. And nobody's asking the questions about why they said, well, you know, 2 weeks and, that's okay. Yeah. Why 2 weeks? How did he know 2 weeks? Who clued him in that it would be 2 weeks? Who clued him in that it would be okay? Because this is, again, as somebody noted via email last night, this is the same Donald Trump that was saying the whole time, well, you know, the election's rigged.
Right.
I mean, I got a story in the stack here, and it's not exactly on point to what we're talking about, Todd. But Claire McCaskill, and nobody's ever going to accuse Claire of being some sort of a paragon of liberalism.
No.
But she is a D, and she would be contributing to the idea of a Democratic majority in the Senate if she can get reelected. Well, lo and behold, according to forensic analysis from the Daily Beast, earlier this year, when she started criticizing Russia and after she had seriously begun her 2018 reelection campaign, well, long about that same time, well, not earlier this year, it was August 2017, Julius Geiser went to Missouri and screamed to, and you know, harangued, because he's the harangutan, harangued his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing groupies there in the crowd, vote her out of office, vote her out of office. That same day, Russian hackers targeted Senator Claire McCaskill. And as the Daily Beast points out, that makes the Missouri Democrat the first identified target of the Kremlin's 2018 election interference. Now, in isolation, simply in a vacuum, we'd go, well, you know, isn't that an interesting coinky-dinky? But we must remember that within 24 hours of Donald Trump saying, and Russia, if you're listening, I hope you'll go after Hillary Clinton, or some such drivel. And within 24 hours of him saying that, they did. He is literally giving orders to people engaging in warfare against the United States.
That's the way it looks on the face of it, as they say.
Now, I'm the one who said, you know, if we're going to talk about what he's done, we're better off using the word traitorous as opposed to treasonous.
Right.
Because treason is defined as a state of war.
Right.
Or you have to give aid and comfort to the enemy in state of war. And the rule is that you can't have a state of war unless Congress declares a war.
Mm-hmm.
But what if the war has already been waged against you? I mean, if indeed it's not meddling, if indeed it's not interference, Todd, if it is in fact an act of war to attack our electoral processes, then when he gives orders of who to attack, fuck, that is treason. Isn't it?
Well, yes. I mean, we have to look. I don't know what the statute is, but you see, what you're saying is, yeah, because it looks like there's been ongoing and continual cyber war. Now, we use that term, but is that actually a legal term for war? Like, we use it. But
well, how much damage? How much? But okay. How much damage has to be done in order for it to qualify as an act of war?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because this is exactly where I want. Right. So listen, just the other day, you heard these reports also, probably, that not only did they infiltrate not only, I mean, use my pronouns properly, not only did the Russians infiltrate, or Russian operatives infiltrate the voter rolls, also the grid, our power grid.
That was the next thing. Yeah. And look, if you're
I draw the line. That's fucking stupid.
Go ahead, please.
No, that's terrible. What? What the fuck is this asshole doing? If you just look at this shit, just objectively, take the politics out. The Manlio fascist that we call our president is a Russian operative. Only because if you just look at this objectively, everything that he's been doing, the people that he's hired, his cabinet, they're all weakening our government. They hollowed out the State Department. They're fucking up the education. Betsy DeVos doesn't know a damn thing about education. Everybody's just trying to get money, sucking up money as fast as they can, or dismantling. Look at my guy here from South Carolina, right? Mulvaney. Now, he's a wrecker, too. He's going in, and you see what... I'm not trying to create. I want other people to call in, but it's just you've touched on too many issues here. This is somebody, you know, and these people, they want to get as much as they want to get. The Republicans they're going to suck the blood out of this.
Of the matter is, Todd, they don't care what happens to this country as long as the checks keep clearing.
They must not. Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. This is a question I was thinking about earlier today. You know what? This is interesting, I think. And one more thing. If you see Yuri, I don't know this guy named Yuri who for Netroots. If you see him, I don't know if you're going to talk to him or not. I don't know. But, you know, if you think about it, a lot of GOPers, you know, Trump backers are always like denouncing folks, you know, who are professors or you know, professional folks, people in education. We don't need that. You know, it's just anti-intellectualism and anti-education. But and they say, well, you know, the liberal press, and you know what? But if you think about it, once you attain a certain type of knowledge base, once you attain a certain type and not and breadth and width of information in life, and in a scholarly way. It would seem to me, now I've been thinking about this, you almost have to be a social Darwinist to be a Republican or a GOPer now. Because once you have a certain amount of information, how the hell could you be a Republican?
Well, again, as long as the check clears. That's the point. There's no substance to the Republican Party anymore. it's all smoke and mirrors. I mean, the best example, you know, we had the breaking news last night. The House members file impeachment against Rod Rosenstein. Well, it turns out it's Jim Jordan who turned the other eye toward rape, away from rape. And he and eight other maggots in the Freedom Caucus have filed these articles of impeachment. And at the same time, he stated his intention to run for Speaker of the House. Holy dog shit.
Well,
but there's no there. It's all a fundraising stunt. It's all it does is support the importation of money to his political campaign and his political life, and that of the Freedom Caucus.
And they just went on vacation, so now he can go home and he can be like, yeah, it was tough on it, wasn't it? You know, he's going home saying, yeah, you know, trying to get some bad.
I mean, how bad is it? Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, who just a couple of days ago was chanting, lock her up, had to come out today in defense of Rod Rosenstein. Now, that may have been damning with faint praise or a sure sign that he's soon to go. But Sessions actually did that. He defended Rod Rosenstein against the onslaught of charges brought by a guy who somehow managed not to hear the screams of guys being raped or the conversations that they had about being raped and groped, you know, by the team doctor who worked closely with Jim Jordan. There is no substance to the Republican Party.
They're shameless.
They exist to hoover up political money. There's no policy. Whatever geezer disgustus twoops on any given day is what they believe in. And if it changes 15 minutes later, then that's what they believe in. And 15 minutes later, it's something else. There's no there.
Oh, you know what? The Manlio fascist, he can't afford to leave office. Because if he leaves office, New York State is going to drag his ass to court.
Oh, that's the other big news from today. The chief financial officer of the Trump Organization has been served.
Served.
Well, you do that well. And so that means that there's probably going to be an extra special dose of Fletcher's Castoria in Geezer Disgustus's baby bottle this evening, because he's going to be straining like a dog trying to pass a peach pit by morning, thinking about all the shit that Mr. Weisselberg can say about the dirty dealings of the Trump Organization.
I'm sorry, man. You cracked me up.
I don't even know if they still make Fletcher's Castoria.
Oh, God. Man.
But everyone seems to agree that this guy knows where the bodies are buried.
Hello?
Yeah. Weisselberg?
Oh. Yeah.
He knows what's going on. And I don't know if you saw it or not, but Michael Avenatti came out today and said, oh, by the way, yeah, they paid off a bunch of women in 2016. I have evidence. I'm not bringing it to light yet. But they were worried about at least one pregnancy scandal.
Hmm.
And now we find out that Julius Geezer and Melanoma are feuding because Melanoma likes to watch the CNN. And so consequently, today a CNN correspondent got chucked out of a press avail, you know, banned because she had asked him if he felt betrayed by Michael Cohen earlier in the day.
Mm-hmm.
These are just, you know, they are. They're fascists. They really are fascists. I mean, the real kind.
They're fascists.
The head fascist is an idiot. Mussolini wasn't an idiot. Franco was not an idiot. And the little guy with the Charlie Chaplin mustache was not an idiot. Donald Trump is an idiot. And he's not crazy like a fox or anything like that. He's an idiot.
No, it's not. And, and I guess, you know, Chris Matthews mentioned this, but we both probably already saw it. But I talked with a few people around here. But, it, you know, when Putin and Trump returned to the dais after the meeting, did you notice how, I don't remember, we already talked about that, how Putin just bolted up the steps like he just had his wheatgrass drink and he had his workout and, he was just on point. And Trump was doing the damn demented. You know, people who have Alzheimer's and or dementia, there's a certain type of gait that they have with their feet. They kind of shuffle. And he looked like he was shuffling. He was doing the dementia shuffle.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I refer to that as his shambling gait.
His shambling gait. That's it. You hit it. So, but, I mean, I had to, YouTube is a beautiful thing. Because you can just, when you want to study something. So I looked at that again, and I was like, oh, my God, this is frightening. And you look at, no volume. Just look at the body language. Trump looks like Putin just told him, Donald. And imagine this. He could have said, okay, if you don't do X, Y, Z, I'm going to shut down the power grid in your country. And then we can all, we can put out a message. We can make it look like it was anybody. See, in other words, meeting with that man alone, Trump and Putin, that meeting, a universe of things could go wrong, and almost nothing could have gone right from that. I just can't believe we're in this position. This is insane. And these fucking idiot people. Washington Journal, man.
That is the key word. Emphasis on the word idiot. Do you remember several, well, I guess it was more than a decade and a half, 2 decades ago. There was a movie with Jack Lemmon and James Garner. They played ex-presidents. It was called My Fellow Americans. And one of them was a Republican, the other was a Democrat. They were both out of office. And it turned out their lives were at risk because there was a plot afoot inside the White House. Well, there was a guy named John Hurd was the actor. He played the vice president, and he was a bumbling idiot who, you know, the minute you watched the movie back in the day, you went, oh, that's modeled on Dan Quayle. He's an idiot. He's a fool. And then there's the big reveal. And I think I've got it here. I can't play it to find out, but I think I've got it here. Mm-hmm. And this reminds me of Donald Trump so much. So convinced that he's a genius and that nobody realizes what a genius he is.
Well, gentlemen, if you ask me, this whole thing's been a real coup. Funny thing, isn't it? Everyone thinks I'm this idiot, but nobody knows it was all just a big facade.
It's all just a big facade. Yeah, I love that. Just a big facade.
Bob, you know how to cue it up. Just like I'll never forget, we talked on time, and you had the original Manchurian candidate. You had that thing queued up. You know, we're just on top of it. Yeah. So I hope you get some good networking done down there at Netroots. And,
I do, too. I wish there was some way to, because you and I were the ones who talked about the horn in.
The horn in. I thought that was still going on.
Wouldn't that have been a blast?
Are you kidding, man? That in New Orleans? Oh my God! That, you know, like you were saying, a small group. You know what? Next year. There's always next year. But yes, that's a fantasy. But that would have been beautiful. Oh my God! That would have been great.
Barbecue and hot slaw for everybody.
You know.
Oh, and by the way, just in case you were wondering, I mean, just if Trader Joe's was advertising with us and I was doing these live drops, it would be awesome. By the way, when you pick up your bottle of Trader Joe's Yuzu hot sauce,
yes,
it's only fair to warn you that it is fan-freaking-tastic. Nothing else. No sauce or anything. On a plate of pulled pork or to sprinkle across some ribs.
Mm.
I've done it. It's amazing. I mean, you can have your various and sundry corporate thick, gooey, sloppy, sticky barbecue sauces. Mm-mm. Nothing but some smoky, hickory smoky pulled pork and that scattered across it. And if you can't be happy with that, you can't be happy.
I don't want to say it like I'm a snob now or anything, but I just remember, and I see other people, another term, what I'm talking about is liberally using barbecue sauce. Just like when we were kids, you just like, put a big mound of ketchup on the plate when you had French fries. And then you get older, you learn less is more. You know, when you really get a good rub on the meat and you do it right, barbecue sauce, unless you're doing pulled pork or maybe some ribs, if they're dry. It just interferes with the taste of the meat.
Yeah, it's overkill. I mean, it covers up instead of enhancing. Whereas
exactly.
And that's another thing about this trip. The way I'm going, I had a lovely offer from our buddy Don in West Tennistan to knock off overnight at his place, and it would have been awesome. But I'm taking a different route. And one of the nice things out of this is on the way down, since I'm stopping, I'll be able to go to the old home place. I mean, there is no home place, but I'll be able to go and visit and stop and put some flowers on my mom and dad's graves.
That's beautiful, man.
And it means a lot. I went a lot of years without being able to go there, but if I can get
just like it was meant to be, Bob. See?
Yeah, if I can get down there and do that, then that'll make it even more special. And then while I'm there in that little Brigadoon in the corner of northwest Alabama, maybe I can swing by the one barbecue joint that I'm actually interested. I mean, their barbecue is better than mine. Okay,
is that the one that has the good slaw?
Yes, that's the very home. That's the first place that slaw was ever served, and they're the only ones that do it right to this day. I can never get mine to taste quite like theirs. I can get close.
You know what? They had the, you know, I just thought about this, but see, northern Alabama, there's a lot of probably, in other words, the hardwoods. You got a nice variety of hardwoods in those woods up there, down there for me.
Well, I mean, there's hickory and pecan, and you know, there's some oak, and you know, there's a lot of North Alabama has a lot of peach orchards, and so you know, a little dry peach wood makes a lovely smoke.
Did you try any peach beer at Trader Joe's?
No, I didn't do any beer at all. I actually looked for the Kolsch, but they didn't have it.
Okay.
They had other varieties of Josef's Brau, but no Kolsch.
Well,
they looked at me funny when I asked them about it. So maybe they never had it.
It's the summer brew. The Colts is the summer brew this year. They call it the summer brew. And they had the check. But anyway, you saw the kind of beer they had. Well, anyway, you're not supposed to drink that much anyway. So, but you know, I'm not telling you how to live. But it's just like the thing is, you can buy a single bottle of beer, nice high quality beer, and it will be the same price as if you bought the six. Or
yeah. Yeah.
So like, if you're entertaining, Trader Joe's is the place to go. And we made falafel today. They had this falafel mix.
Ooh.
I mean, you can make it. Oh, man. This shit, I'm not kidding. This shit ain't no fucking joke. Like, I've had really good falafel downtown, like, you know, with the real Middle Eastern people making it. This shit is no fucking joke. I'm going tomorrow. I'm buying three boxes. I'm getting flour. I made the pita from scratch. I made the pita bread from scratch.
No, you did not. What did you?
Yes,
What did you use to bake homemade pita?
Well, I have a big old stove, and I cranked that sucker up to 500, and I got my big cast iron skillet out, and I pretty much thought I knew how to make it, and I just. You know, rechecked it online with a bunch of different recipes because, you know, we can't just trust one source. It's just flour, oil, some kosher salt if you have it, which I do, yeast, you know, warm water. I don't know if I said that. And, you know, that's it. The secret is to get it just right. Now, you know, and you know, yeah, it helps to roll that bread. Bob, I'm telling you. I gave some to the neighbor. Neighbor was like, "Oh, you went to the store and got some pita bread." I was like, "No, I
no.
just made it."
Ooh.
See, she loves that shit. But you know, my woman likes it. Everybody gets along. This is a retired. She's a retired school teacher, and she gives me plants and stuff. And I'm, you know, we trade food off. But no, it's very easy. So anyway, I'm not trying to keep it. But yeah, the heavy skillet. That's the secret. You got to have, you know, a broiler. You could probably do it in a toaster oven too, but you got to have a heavy skillet. You need to have a hot plate. So you get the pan really hot. You roll it out once you get your pita bread. It almost comes out. You want the consistency of like a pizza dough. It's really simple. It's so simple. You roll it out. And I think one of the keys is to have just an extra bowl with flour in it. Because once you get your glob of dough out, it's going to have sticky spots in it. And it's supposed to, because that's going to create the air pockets. But you want to drop it into that bowl of flour and move it around and get it totally basted in that flour before you start to roll it out so that it won't stick as much to the rolling pin. And two or three rolls, both sides, boom, 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 the pan is hot. Get that pan smoking hot. Throw it on there. You brown one side really good for like maybe a minute and a half. Flip it over, and you put it in the oven under the broiler, and it puffs up. You got the bubbles. I was shocked. I was like, my God. Man, I'm ready to get a food truck. I'm not fucking around. I think in my older age, I'm going to get a food truck near the beach. Shit. After 1:30, I'm in the water, man. You got to catch me early. I'll make my money early, and then I'll be in the water.
Todd's pita breakfast.
Hey, man. Thanks. I'm really happy for you, though. Everyone, look, we need you down there, though. Seriously, man. You got a network, and that will increase, you know, the listenership and everything else, you know, because look at the quality of the program you have. Come on. You know, the things you talk about, they just catch up like 2 or 3 weeks later.
Man, I appreciate that. That is so kind. That is so very kind. Because, there's a lot of effort goes into this, and to know it's appreciated. There's no Facebook metric you can put on that.
Oh, Facebook.
And it this almost guarantees I'll get some cranky ass email about, yeah, you and your sycophantic listeners. Yeah.
Yeah, well, see, oh, and one more thing. I want to go back to that what we were talking about with Republicans being social Darwinists. You know what? Human beings wouldn't be around, I know you want me to go, but human beings would not be around without, like Burning Spear said, you know, social living. In other words, communal living.
You're absolutely right. I mean, that's anthropology 101.
101.
There's no evidence for wandering individual humans starting cultures. I mean, stone soup is a nice idea, but the guy, remember the children's story? But the guy who shows up and makes the stone soup has to have a community to bring him the pot, he's got the pot and the stones. He's got to have a community to bring him the onions and the carrots and the potatoes and the meat and the tomatoes and we are social animals. We're primates, okay?
That's it.
And there's no, you know, ask Jane Goodall or any of the primatologists. If an ape has to go out on its own and is cast out of the group, that ape dies. There are no bootstrap apes. Okay? And the same, you know, wolves have an intensely cooperative social structure. And if you as a wolf fuck up so bad that all the other wolves turn and bare their teeth at you and you gotta go, it's a death sentence. And it carries over historically. You know, Republican Rome. Oh God, he's gone to Rome again. Republican Rome had no prisons. For traitors, they had the Tarpeian Rock, and they just carried your ass up to the Tarpeian Rock and threw you off, and that was the end of your treason.
That was that.
I mean, didn't fuck around. You know, not even going to bloody up a sword. Take him to the top of the rock. Throw him off. Fuck it. But then as they got more civilized, they came into the concept of banishment. And so they formalized it. And it's I hesitate to say romantic, but it's kind of, you know, elegant-ish. Because if you got your happy ass banished, if you fucked up bad enough to get banished from Rome, then the Senate would decide, instead of taking your ass on top of the rock, and they, you know, they usually didn't do that unless they absolutely had to. There are no jails. But your order of banishment would say that you were Now this was a highly advanced culture, right?
But there was.
But they'd say you are denied fire and water within X distance of Rome. And if somebody caught you having fire and water inside that distance, they could and often would kill your ass. But what it usually meant is you had to go and live in the provinces. You had to go, oh, fuck, I got to go live in Marseille. Okay. Or Lyon. Or Trier. Maybe you had to go live in Athens. Or you had to go and live in Jerusalem. Or one of the, you know, maybe Alexandria. But you had to get outside that set distance before you could have fire and water, because fire and water are essential to human life. And you were you were banished from the goodness that was living in Rome.
I'm still trying to figure out how you could get banished from Rome, because they accept just about anything. I mean, as long as you pay your taxes, they don't give a fuck what you do. I mean, as far as what I've read about ancient Rome.
So, but that was an expression of the fact that that was a culture. It was a society. It wasn't a gathering of lone wolves or rugged individualists or people hauling themselves up by their good God-fearing Republican bootstraps.
Well, no, exactly.
And again, that goes back to what we were talking about, Todd. Everything that the Republicans claim to pin their existence on is just a hollow fraud. It's a big thing that looks solid, but it turns out it's a drum. If you walk up to it, you thump it, and all you do is you hear a hollow sound. They can't, you know, Republicans no more than Democrats can get along in a society where everybody's out there slitting everybody else's throats. That's fucking Somalia, okay? And that's why for years I've said that the real Republican platform is, you know, Haiti with cable. But they only want that for the rest of us. They, by God, want a fully functioning society where the lights come on when they flip the switch and the water comes out and it won't poison you and they can breathe the air. And they haven't figured out yet that the only way that they can have those goddamn things is if we have them too. Because you can't segregate the air, you can't segregate the water, but, you know, you can have Flint and then just, you know, all the good Republican white folks move away.
Say it, Bob. Preach it. And remember, that goes for health care. Because guess what? When you don't have everybody fully insured, when things start to pop off, when you get these strange pathogens, these bugs, you know, you got people going to fast food jobs. You want that dollar hamburger, and they're going to work with TB and God knows what else. And you think, I'm okay. I'm going to my gated community. Yeah, guess what you just picked up?
Well, I never got around to it, but a few weeks back, I had a story, and I'm looking for it now, where it turned out that, and it was badly underreported, it turned out that disease was running through our concentration camps.
Uh-oh.
There it is. Goes all the way back to July the 2nd. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. It's not one of our concentration camps. Well, it is kind of, but not really. As health conditions worsen at prison holding 1,000 detainees, staff fears a riot. This was at the prison in Victorville, California, where the Trump regime recently sent 1,000 immigration detainees, even though people were already saying there's inadequate medical care here and the conditions are getting worse and infectious diseases are continuing to multiply.
Victorville's out in the sticks.
10 cases of scabies, 1 case of chicken pox. The scabies tripled to at least 38 detainees. Another person got chicken pox.
What? Wait a minute. You talking about pestilence?
You are.
What the fuck are you talking about, man? They can't release these people. What?
I know.
I don't think I just heard you. I didn't hear you correctly.
And they were. It got so bad that they were quarantining people in the chicken pox unit and the scabies unit.
Oh shit! What the fuck? That's serious shit, man.
The president of the American Federation of Government Employees, Local 3969, broke the news. Representative Mark Takano, a Democrat from California, toured Victorville in early July. And detainees told him they'd been unable to wash their clothes, underwear, and bed linen since they arrived more than 3 weeks ago. Many had not been allowed to use the recreational facility at the complex. Several did not understand why they were being held in a prison. Staff at the prison said that if medical conditions continued to worsen, they feared a riot could break out, endangering the detainees, prisoner, and staff.
Bob, that's a whole show. That story right there, that is a whole show. That's a whole program, not show. But you know what? That's another reason why this attorney general needs to be brought up on charges. You know what? Let me ask you a simple question. Why or why not is he recused from the Russia investigation? There's only one answer. And what's that answer, Bob? You know it.
Because he's compromised.
Because he's compromised. And because he perjured himself verbally and in writing. He just hasn't been.
I can't wait. I hope somewhere along the way there's a perjury indictment for that little bastard.
Because he's just an evil fuck. And first of all, that goddamn name. I still can't get over it.
Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III?
With that kind of fucking name, man, you know goddamn well, the first thing he should have said was that, I know that some people will be put off by my name, but I will stand to protect all Americans because we are all Americans and law enforcement protects all, blah, 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 blah. You know, a nice speech.
Lock her
even
up.
Even if you don't mean
lock
it.
Lock her up. Lock her up.
And the gleam in his eye.
Yeah, that the twinkle was what made it art.
Did you see that? Oh God, I was like, this is. He would have. I firmly believe. I'm convinced that he would have slaves. He would have some black Negroes and pickaninnies running around if he could. If he could get, he would do that shit. If he could get away with it.
Are you kidding? The Republican Party would show up at the first auction en masse. Oh, by the way, we got to give a shout out to Tracy. Just got a message from her. Yeah, just got a message from her. Said, "Hi, Bob. Hi, Todd. Hey, Tracy.
Hi, Tracy, dear. Everybody's thinking about you.
Absolutely.
Be safe on those roads.
No shit.
I'm shocked by the story with the pestilence, man.
Maybe it didn't come to anything. I mean, that was July the 2nd. I didn't see a bunch of follow-up stories. Or maybe it just fell through the fucking Trump cracks because we spend so much time being obsessed by the latest crazy goddamn thing that he's babbled or twooped or what the hell ever.
No, you're right. And only other thing I want to say about these concentration camps is that we all should have really been shocked when, I forget the name of the congressman, but they refused to let a congressman in to see that facility. Oh, well, I forget where it was. It might have been in Arizona.
Yeah.
But to deny, and the other thing is that who's getting these deals? Who's getting these bids for these prison? In other words, this is like the prison industrial.
Oh, the money's flowing like a mighty river.
See, they're monetizing this shit. That's what you know. You have to look at this whole regime as what they are, grifters. He's trying to get a cut. So when he says, I'm going to do this tariff, they're going to come to me. He's shaking down these motherfuckers. That's what he's doing because that's what he is. He's a fucking street. He's a damn sociopathic street thug mentality idiot. You know, that school messed him up, man. I'm telling you, NEMA messed him up. He spent too long in NEMA.
Oh, there's so many things that messed him up. So many things.
Well, anyway.
By the way, I just got a note from Ron and Raleigh. What you're saying, it puts paid to that horse shit that nasty old woman Maggie Thatcher said about, there is no community. Well, you know, Maggie's in hell now. And see, she's roasting on a spit over a nice slow fire being turned by demons. And she's being basted with Trader Joe's yuzu hot sauce. And every now and then, the devil walks up to her and says, Maggie, you know, somebody might pull this spit out of your ass and let you down for a little while. If you'd holler to the community over there and ask somebody to come get you. Oh, wait, there is no community.
Welcome to hell, Maggie Thatcher.
Couldn't
wow,
resist.
Man. You were on stage. That was good.
That was just spontaneous. Sometimes the inspiration, yeah.
It came from your toenails. That was good.
By the way, Terrace has warned me, never ever say Trump cracks again. Never ever. Apparently there was a mental image generated with that for which I guess I'm responsible. I'm sorry, Terrace. I'm terribly, terribly sorry. But, well, mistakes will be made.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, you take it easy. And once again, congratulations. And this is going to be a big deal.
I sure hope it is. And I hope we can. I have recently been told that everybody on Radio Row is going to share two hard lines and two power connections.
What does that mean?
Yeah, that means internet's going to be real fucking interesting, and so is electricity. But
that didn't sound like a lot. That's why I said two.
Well,
two.
But that means if I get there early, if I can get in there early enough, get everything plugged up, and I mean it doesn't take that much electricity, but you know there's a mixer to plug up and a charger and a couple other things and.
You bring some extra extension cords, I'm sure.
Well, I'm bringing an extension cord. Here, wait a minute. I got a list. Stand by. Extension cord. Multi-plug. I've been doing this for a few days now.
I'm big on this.
Oh.
This makes life easy.
Yeah, you got to. And with any luck at all, you know, we'll do some video too. I need to go and get my, you know, I'll have to do it with Mardi Gras beads on, right?
You just be careful with that food.
Oh, I'm going to be real gentle. I'm not going down there to eat big or anything, but I'm going to, you know. Ain't going to be sitting down at Commander's Palace or Antoine's or anything. You mean the Antoine's of New Orleans? I don't mean Antoine's of Flatbush. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can get a muffaletta from the Central Grocery, I'm going to be a happy man. And I'm not going to be very
far. You're going to take any of your dry rub with you?
And I'm not going to be very, very far at all from Mother's, the greatest cafeteria on earth.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be about the gumbo and the beans and the rice and yeah.
You know something, people, you can eat. Honest to God, the gumbo, like and anything over rice, you can eat that for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And
damn right.
And it's just a matter of, okay, for breakfast we're having the seafood, you know, the sauces. It's the truth. And once I heard you say, yeah, chili and a beer for breakfast, guess what? That will stick with you. You know, as long as you're not an alcoholic, you can have one beer and keep moving. But, you know, with the chili over rice, come on. If you have to eat a solid meal before you get out the door and do some hard work, you got to do what you got to do.
Oh, yeah, you get your little protein, a little starch, a little carbs going. You're ready.
You're ready. Yeah. Shoot. And next time we talk, we're gonna have to make a nice white wine sauce infused with dill and put that over some grilled salmon.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. And by the way, you know what? My salmon thing. I made Agnes so happy with it. Just a nice a nice salmon fillet, and that garlic dill aioli. Or that lemon dill, that lemon dill aioli, that private selection lemon dill aioli from Kroger's.
Right.
Yeah. Can't be that. I've made her salmon a lot of the ways over the years, and I brought that in to her, and you know, Agnes doesn't just sit and wolf down stuff. That salmon did not stay on that plate no time. She said that was the most delicious, and of course, you know, it was over an open fire and some hickory down there doing the smoky thing. And but that lemon dill aioli, man, was right.
That's it. Yeah, that I'll be going to Kroger tomorrow. Also, that I don't know if you the private reserve their breads are really they're not.
Oh
bad.
Yeah,
but
oh yeah, and that gold miner sourdough is to die for.
Oh yeah, so I got a last time I got a loaf of the Hawaiian. You know, always get a rye. You know, I just started using the Trader Joe's bread. Well, I know you don't want to hear about Trader Joe's again.
No. I brought back a loaf of sourdough from Trader Joe's that was
hell yeah,
stunningly
did you look at
good.
It? It's artesian. It's glazed. The air pockets are fucking huge. It's
chewy. Yeah.
Shit. I was like, where the fuck have I been with this shit? I mean, because, you know, usually I get the Arnold, you know, because that's. Seems to be the best.
No, if you can go to a Kroger's, get the Gold Miner sourdough. It's awesome.
Ball game, but.
Yeah, and
but
I mean, they got regular, and they got whole wheat, they got caraway, and they got onion. And the onion sourdough for a grilled cheese, quit it.
God.
By the way, Alexander says, you and Brother Todd are so wrong. The food sounds so yummy. Oh, me and Todd got to do some food porn.
Oh, we're doing it. Look, what's up with this? You know you're getting a flat grill, man. You have this onions and peppers just sweating down, just ready. But back to the bread, I was shocked, man, when I really looked at that Trader Joe's sourdough, because all those times I've gone in there, and I didn't get it. Because sometimes I bake my own bread, you know. But just last week, I did it for the first time. I was shocked. I had no idea what I had been missing out on. I was like, oh, my God. But, The private reserve, the onion rolls they have, they're amazing.
Oh, those are good. I got to tell you, I got one more thing on the New Orleans list, though. I've read about it several times. I got to find it. You know, there was an influx of Vietnamese immigrants into the New Orleans Gulf area,
mm-hmm.
and they took Vietnamese cuisine and they married it up with Cajun cuisine.
Mm.
And there are you ever had a Vietnamese banh mi sandwich?
I love Vietnamese food. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So there are bakers down there that are doing their own bread, and they took the banh mi and they married it up against the po' boy.
Oh shit!
And there are banh mi po' boys. I got to find one.
That might be the place to go to eat. I mean, the Vietnamese, you know, yeah, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, that's worth finding. And Yeah, street food. Got to have a beignet somewhere along the way.
Some deep, on a splendid some, table.
Yeah, some decaf coffee and chicory.
Oh, yeah. Food. Yeah. See, that's the other thing. You know, to have good food, it's a communal thing. You know, I'm not against capitalism. I'm not saying that. But, you know, there's a limit. In other words, it's bullshit. There's enough for everyone right now. You're always going to have some people who are going to be lazy. Nothing you can do about that.
Most of the great cuisines of the world developed long before capitalism did. Most of the things in the South that people cherish and find delicious are, like most everything else that's good in the South, the product of the blessings conferred upon the South by African American people who persisted who refused to just lay down and die, and lived under horrifying circumstances, and somehow or another taught Southern white folks how to eat. But then again, that's the whole conversation about the Columbian Exchange. I mean, Germany without potatoes, Ireland without potatoes, Italy without tomatoes. I mean, do you know what root vegetables they lived on before the potato hit Europe? Your average peasant lived on a steady diet of fucking turnips. I like turnips. But not every goddamn day. But for European peasants, be they German, French, Flemish, what have you, Italians. What's for dinner tonight, wife? What do you think, husband? Turnips. So it's going to be turnips for my entire 40-year life expectancy, isn't it? Yep.
Rhubarb, turnips. They were miserable. But wait a minute. You know, that time I was in, well, the only time I've been in London and outside of Pittsburgh, north of Pittsburgh, they call seasoning salt and pepper. That's like exotic seasoning. You know, fresh ground peppers.
I know.
But wait a minute. You know what? You got the Vietnamese, man. It's the perfect.
Oh, what they? I've done some reading. What they do with shrimp down there? Woo! Get out,
man. That's, come on, one bowl. But see, you can have all your food groups in one bowl. The vermicelli noodles, right?
Yeah.
Even the grilled pork. In other words, you got the nice steamed vegetables. You got the wonderful noodles. You got the meat. Just
chili peppers tucked in there when you least expect it.
Even those good ones. But then you have the whole sign sauce, which is sweet, because sweet and hot, you know, they go together. Ugh. And I told you that story, man. I didn't even start eating Vietnamese food until I was in Salt Lake City, man. And all the maids, you know, mostly are Southeast Asian. So if you go out just outside of Salt Lake, where the regular folk live, you can eat cheap. You know, I was like, wow, this shit is good. So when I got back to Philly, I was like, man, I was in Chinatown every day. Get a big-ass bowl of noodles and meat and vegetables. And that should keep you dig hard, man. You go home and see a woman. Eat,
all right, Todd, we're out of here, man.
I'll see you later. Sorry about that.
That's all right. We'll talk soon.
I'll see you.
Later. The one and only Barbecue Todd, renamed by Brother Deacon Asa, Classy Todd. Yes, indeed. 4 minutes past the hour, time to get out of here. Thanks again to everybody who keeps the program going. Thank you so very much to all of you who for sharing your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thank you so very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, for, Sparky, in the chat room this evening. He tells me we may have a late start to Friday on the front porch tomorrow, but we'll get it going one way or the other. So we'll crank up Friday on the front porch when Sparky says it's time to crank up Friday on the front porch. Thank you to our news ninjas. Hey, Gene, heard you've been under the weather, my friend. Check in from time to time. Let us know you're okay. If you hear this, let me know. We're thinking good thoughts. Thanks very much to Brother Deacon Asa for HeadOn.Live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.